good evening, Council. This is the February 13th Council briefing. We have a handful of items to go over on the agenda. We also have a few miscellaneous items at the end, hoping we can fit in. We do have a hard stop at just before 7 o'clock, as there is another meeting that will start up in the Council chambers. So for the first item, I'm going to turn it over to Kim Bennett.
Hello, Mayor and Council, and congratulations, Mike, on his four-year anniversary.
You survived this 4 years.
For the benefit of the new members, it is part of the city manager's contract that his performance be reviewed annually, once during his anniversary month. And a stipulation in his contract states, and I'm going to read this, the City Council shall consider the results of his performance evaluation and the guidelines applied to department heads in determining the amount of salary and benefit adjustment for the city manager. So the guideline that we use for all city employees, including department directors, is between 2 and 3%, 2 for average, 2.5 for above average, and 3 for exceeds. And this meeting here is for you to discuss with the city manager's performance. And once you determine what salary adjustment you want to give him, I can put it on the meeting for Monday or Tuesday.
So we're going to need to remind everybody about that one. Thank you, Kim, and thank you to you and your department for compiling the feedback from the council. And thanks to all of you for giving your consideration and thoughtful comments to give the city manager some guidance as he goes into his fifth year, right? Is that? I think as we've seen in past years, there are some themes. I think one of them is now is the city and the department, you know, city culture and things like that are going really well, to start seeing a little more intersection with the community in various different forms. And we saw that in a few different ways here. And so I think that was the big theme that stood out for me. But overall, I think this was a great review and reflects the great performance that we've had from our city manager over this past year and hope to continue to have for many years to come. Does anybody else have any thoughts or comments to add?
Go ahead.
I would just agree with you on the community piece. That was something that's very important to me. And so this coming year, hopefully we can work on that. But otherwise, you've been doing an amazing job and very grateful for everything you do.
I'm proud to call you our city manager. I think you've done very well for our city in Jacksonville Beach. I just have one request. Can 1 year, just 1 year, we do GP's eval?
Oh, you just woke him up.
No, thank you. Thank you for all you've done for us. I've appreciated it.
Any other comments?
Outstanding job. I think it's not just recognized within the community, but around the state that you're one of the leading city managers in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. So I just appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. Likewise.
I'm new, but obviously been around for a while off Planning Commission, and I'll say that I think I pick up on the consensus that certainly internally, The feedback has been outstanding, and morale seems to be at an all-time high, with the exception of Chief Smith and his. Yeah, just kidding. But appreciate it, and it's been outstanding.
I just obviously I'm new to the process and new to kind of a lot of this. I don't have as much experience, obviously, previously as Greg does. I will say I'm not a everybody gets a trophy kind of guy. So my my basic, you know, comments were just kind of like I don't have anything to compare you to. I did say, you know, your communication is excellent. That's my, you know, observation. That's my limited interaction at this point. So I guess if everybody else is happy, we're going to see how the next 4 years go for me.
So just keep this in mind that we do this annually. So throughout the year, if you keep a log, whatever you think of things. And obviously, Mike's an open door, an open book. And if you have any concerns going, you know, on the day-to-day, I'm sure he's always welcome to sit down and talk to you about that. But anything that's a big overreaching thing that we want to have him focus on or work on for the coming year, this is a great place to do that. So I think just looking at the numbers, I would categorize this as excellent, and unless anyone has any objections with put forward the full 3% raise. Everybody good? Yep. This is not a vote. We're just looking for heads nodding.
Right, great.
Okay.
Great. I'll put it on for Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you all. And again, my job wouldn't be possible if it wasn't good, clear guidance from the council on what's important to you as representatives for the community, and the support of all the directors and the staff behind me. They help make the job a lot easier than it should be, because they're that good at what they do. So thank you. With that, we'll jump into the next topic. Number two on the list is the Legislative Policies Manual. And I'll ask Sandy Robinson to come on up. I believe she had sent to each of you in advance, as well as with the packet, the opportunity to start looking at revisions made to the LPM document. So with that, Sandy, the floor is yours.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, members of council, I sent to you all the last set of proposals. At least what I see are the last set of proposals for amendments to the Legislative Policy Manual. We last addressed this on December 12th. I tried to take as many of your comments as possible and incorporated changes based on those comments. To that end, I went through and I made things gender neutral, where possible, where I could hyperlink some of the text to appendix information that we'd had in the past. I tried to do that as well. The additional amendments really sort of flesh out this goal that I have to have that manual serve as a guide to anyone who's doing business with the City Council, for them to have an understanding of how you operate and what they should expect if they attend a meeting or if they have to conduct business through a public hearing. And so these are all proposals. You can say you reject them entirely. You can say, I like part of this, but I don't like how it's phrased. I'm open to having additional things provided to me to incorporate, but at the end of this, what I'd like to know is whether you want me to continue to work on this, or if it's sort of substantially complete and we can tee this up for a council meeting to be approved. So if you would just indulge me a minute, I will go through and summarize what the proposed amendments are, and the proposed amendments are under the red, in the red font, underscored. And then after I've summarized them, you guys can decide whether or not you want me to go through specific sections in more detail, or if the summaries are enough. But with respect to the substantive text, in section A, under meetings, what I've done is added more provisions to show how you conduct yourselves in meetings and the types of meetings that you may call. I also included in section A penalty for violating a shade meeting. In section B, which addresses the mayor position and the mayor pro tem / vice mayor position, I really sort of teed up more language that gives us the flexibility of now incorporating the term vice mayor. At the election of the person who holds that position, or alternatively, those outside of the city. I included also for the mayor pro tem removal provisions. At section D, the section deals with voting, added additional provisions that are related to the duty to vote, and then further demonstrates that when you've disqualified yourself from voting due to either an actual or perceived conflict, what that attaches to. At section E, order of business, we addressed that in some detail in our last meeting, but what was clearly added was a section that allows for approving the agenda, making sure that that approval process did not automatically extend to the consent agenda. And just in terms of a note, if you all agree with those changes under order of business, there will have to be a change to our city code, either in tandem or shortly after you approve these processes. At section F, rules of procedure, I've added a lot more procedural motions and how they should be handled. And the benefit of that is twofold. First of all, I've tried to address those things that tend to come up often in our meetings, but there's also been a provision that's been added where for our boards and commissions, if they don't adopt their own policies and procedures or bylaws, they will automatically default to the legislative policy manual for how they handle their business. So some of that detail really sort of affords us an opportunity to give them more direction in how they carry on their business. But the things in particular I wanted to highlight here, there was a particular provision that was included that says the mover is prohibited against speaking against the motion. So that is a Roberts Rules law for the sake of no better word at this point. But we have this practice where typically the vice chair, the vice mayor makes the motion. And there was one incident, one motion in particular that I recall where, according to our practice, the vice mayor made the motion, but then he was the first to speak against it. And so there's that conflict because our rules right now say we default to Robert's rules. So either we incorporate this to sort of make it clear what the baseline is, or alternatively, we can say in this respect, we're not going to follow Robert's rules, and the mover can speak against the motion. But I wanted to bring that up just so we had an opportunity to come to some kind of understanding as to how the practice sometimes spills over to being a conflict with the rule. And I also want to say before leaving this particular provision, it has been brought to my attention by one of our esteemed members that at subparagraph K under F should have been subparagraph J. And so once we make that a correction, all of those after that will have to be renumbered. At section G, Boards and Commission highlighted the provisions about eligibility for appointment, eligibility for reappointment, touching on some issues that have come up recently with the reappointment process. So again, all of these are proposals. We can take them out. Also, there was quite a bit of additional text added for the creation of committees and giving the mayor appointment and removal authority on membership for committees. And that's all subject to council's approval, but we didn't have that in writing anywhere else. At section H, a very small change, but there's just some language that signals that if you, as an individual member, send out congratulatory correspondence or condolences or something to a constituent or someone in the community, unless you've been authorized by council, that is your individual or your personal condolences, and that it, you know, we want to make sure that the world understands that you would not be speaking for council in that situation. Section I addresses a number of things. I've tried to streamline all of the information that we currently have about, you know, how council processes its own business, reimbursements for travel arrangements and things of that nature. I did add some language in there to address, at least for those members of the community who would look to our policy manual to determine whether or not there was some kind of conflict for voting, clarify that in the event a member receives a campaign donation, that's not considered a gift and disqualifies you all from participating in the discussion or voting on matters that come before you that may actually be connected with the donor. So I just wanted to highlight that and say that we default in terms of looking at conflict, we default to the Florida Code of Ethics for public officers and employees, and that's very specific as to how we determine what a conflict is.
What line are you on right now?
This is in section I. I'm not going through, but section I begins at page 21. And so there's going to be a place there for gifts that addresses that particular provision. I also included in there about how you would fill a vacancy. Again, that was more one of those things where you bookmark just to have an opportunity to speak about it. But there should be some type of formality or formal action the council takes in terms of what it would do to fill vacancies on the council in the future. This was just to make sure that that didn't slip through the cracks. And also, when it got down to the city manager, included more provisions demonstrating the scope of his authority with respect to city operations, what he can do. It's not exhaustive, but it's just for those who are new members, this could serve as, again, a guide to show how things are should happen in the city and with respect to his position and the city council. The manager just went through his evaluation process. Many of the things that you all did with respect to that were laid out in the former version. As you can see with what's been proposed, a lot of that's been taken out, which gives you flexibility, number one. And I understand that the processes that were originally incorporated were, you know, first time events for you all. You hadn't had any processes in place. So it gives you a chance to see what's worked well and not have you committed to what didn't work particularly well. It just simply defaults you to, he has to have this evaluation, and then as you look to other localities, you can conform what you do going forward. And the similar types of changes were made with respect to the city attorney's position for the same reason. And as with Section F, Section I also has to be renumbered starting at I-14 because there was I-12, I-13s. And other than that, the only thing I will call to your attention is I proposed in the last set of proposals that we limit speakers at courtesy of the floor. No one seemed to push back too much on that, but offered also the option of limiting or establishing a time limit for applicants and the staff for quasi-judicial proceedings. And we never really tied that up. So there are blanks there where I suggested that there would be some limitation. And if I could get some direction there, that would be great. So with that said, thus the summary of my changes. I'm happy to go through it how we want to go through it at this point. Or answer any questions.
It's really coming together. And I wish I had something like this when I started as a council member. And I also want to appreciate you for removing the word he from the mayor section. At least we got a win somewhere. But I did note that the time limits, I'm still really uncomfortable with designating times, especially for the city staff and for the applicant. So I don't really feel like that should be time limited.
Well, you know, I mean, there's no harm to it. Like, I've come from a jurisdiction where each side got 20 minutes, and, you know, when you're presenting, that could be a lot of time. I remember, you know, I presented at some forum, and you said I went too long. Yes, so 20 minutes could be a long time.
Well, it just kind of... But I think it could backfire that people are like, oh, 20 minutes? Am I supposed to be talking for 20 minutes? Where we have presentations all the time that are 5 or 6 minutes.
Yes.
So I almost feel like that sets a time parameter where I don't feel like we need to set a max time parameter. Okay. I mean, that's my opinion. I don't think it's a problem.
Can we use a word like reasonable and a reasonable amount of time? And then that way it kind of leaves a little...
Limited to?
Yeah.
Limited to. At a max.
Leave some discretion out there.
My feeling is it hasn't been a problem, so what are we fixing?
Right.
If we have a problem, we can always readdress it if we need to.
Right.
But at this point, I don't know that we need to fix it.
And I definitely, I think it even has staff limited. I definitely don't want to limit staff in here. So I don't think, yeah. I mean, for me, I'm a reasonable amount of time, and the applicant needs to decide what that is.
I'm good with that as well.
Anything else?
Yeah, so I had conversation with Ms. Robinson about I-13, the first I-13, vacating seat. So one of the issues that I brought up that almost happened to us in November was what do we do in the event that we have a tie? and it's not addressed in there, but it needs to be, I guess, addressed by ordinance. So that's something that we may want to consider sooner than later in case something like this happens again. And then this other thing in that same section, I think it was the very first paragraph, it said, should any vacancy occur within the council, office of the mayor, other than by recall provisions of the city charter, the city council shall elect a person to fill the vacancy. Shouldn't it be select instead of elect, or appoint instead of elect? Because that's what we're doing in essence. But I don't know, again, if that's, I guess that's a... You said you pulled that from the charter?
That's the language of the charter. It is the appointment process. So, I mean, we can, at some point in the future, if you want to have Horace Mary, but you could say, okay, elect, i.e. appoint, or something like that. But it is an appointment process, whether you call it an election or not. Because it's just you all voting on who's going to be in that seat.
I don't mind it being there. I just feel like that if... You know, if you start looking at outside of us, somebody might look at that and go, wait a minute, you know, is that an election process or is that a selection process? So.
It's an election.
I mean, a point is fine.
Being election, though.
Yeah, sure.
Candidates are proposed and we vote on them. So some campaign harder than others.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine with leaving it.
Okay.
Elect. And I don't know that we could really spell out a process for a tie at this level, other than that we need to come up with a process for a tie.
So in the charter, at section 15, they call, in the event of a tie vote in the general election, you choose by lot.
Right.
So basically,
basically
you guys can have a similar process. If a tie vote, you know, you put the two names in separate envelopes and then decide.
Well, as it stands now, it's a failed motion, right? If it's in a tie.
Yeah, but that's only if it's in the form of the motion.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to make your nominations by motion. You can just take nominations from the floor. You don't have to have a second. You can vote on it. So if it's I would have said treat it like a tie vote, simply because that's the easiest thing to grab too. But once I started reading the charter, and there is obviously some provision for dealing with tie votes, we can mirror our process.
Well, let's do that, or refer to it in this language.
That's what we would have had to do if we had ended with a tie. We would have had to go to a game of chance, and I just would hate to get down to a coin flip on a candidate. But we also could have had six individuals, you know, six people, six votes.
Sure, but it's still a tie, right?
Yeah.
So then you just keep going back at it until someone breaks, or, you know what I mean?
So.
That's my point then. I think that it probably sooner than later should be addressed, but that's just my thoughts.
Going back to this public hearings.
You told me the page in.
I'm sorry. A3, H4. So really this is more just a, I can't remember exactly where it was, more just a procedural question for you, because our practice has been, and the way it's advised on the supplemental papers that we get for each hearing, is we hear from the applicant, we hear public hearing for, against, close the public hearing, motion, and our practice has been that's where the questions come in. But the way I'm reading this is that we actually should do that during the public hearing.
You can. I mean, I'm just, this is a proposal. You're not, you don't have to wait to ask your questions after the public hearing.
But should we, if I get the applicant back up to the podium, like we reopened the public hearing last week on Monday, is that what we should be doing?
Well, the only reason that we had to reopen it is because we thought he had fully put on his evidence. And then, you know, prior to the time we reopened the public hearing, you'd ask me whether or not we should close the public hearing, and I say yes, because I thought he was done. And he decided he was going to put on additional evidence based on the comments, I think, partly that were raised in the public hearing by members of the public. But the law requires you, if you're going to take that information and it's going to have a substantive impact on you, it may have a substantive impact on your decision, it has to be under oath. So you had to reopen the public hearing. But let's just say you ask something that really was just kind of frivolous. I'm just going to just say frivolous. You wouldn't have had to open up the public hearing to ask that question and get the answer. But it was just based on what was going on, you knew he was trying to further that application now with the applicant and I think the architect or someone else was there. He had two really expert witnesses there. It had to be under oath. Mm. And the only way you could get it under oath was to reopen the public hearing. So that's, it was kind of based on what was going on at that time. And this proposal is grounded in part prior experience. And it works very well. It works very well when you're not asking, when you don't have limits on the applicant, because then you don't have to worry about, well, does my questions cut into that person's time and all of that stuff. So it kind of makes it easier, but it can work this way. And it might be easier, so it's up to you guys.
Okay. I mean, I don't think it's a problem. I hold questions intentionally. I don't have to do that. You know, if staff makes their presentation, the applicant makes their presentation, then we can go into council questions from there. As long as we're not debating the merits of the proposal, they can ask informational questions and just get them over with, and then that way we don't have to keep opening and closing the public hearing.
It's easier if you're the agent. The agent is representing the applicant, because you know at that point that person's comments really aren't the equivalent of your competent substantial evidence. You know, at least like with Zach, I'm going to use Zach Miller as an example. He's an attorney, and so if we treated him just as an attorney agent, we shouldn't be construing a lot of what he says as the competent substantial evidence of what's in the application itself, as opposed to argument of counsel. And that's how attorneys' words are treated. They're not treated as evidence. But if he, let's just say he disclosed, I have ownership interests, what I'm saying is also as someone who has an interest in the outcome, then we might have to treat him, even though he's an attorney slash agent, as a, you know, as a material witness as well, and put him under oath. So a lot of this is going to be based on the facts you have in front of you. So if it makes sense, let's do it. If it's not, I mean, but these are processes that, how should this go? And this is how it should go. If we don't have in there that the applicant has a right to cross-examine, we've just gone through that. It may not be worth putting it in our rules, but it's, we know that could happen based on the facts as we gather them. So it's just how far you want it to go.
Okay. I've got a question. So we invite rebuttal from the applicant or their representative, typically before we hear public testimony. Should we not therefore close the public hearing until after we've then given them, because that wouldn't have happened the other night if we had gone ahead and left it open. You closed it as you should have after public testimony, but should we go ahead and leave it open as we ask the applicant if they have any rebuttal and therefore they could have brought up their other
comments? I think the result of what the members of the public say during the public hearing. You see what I'm saying? So I don't have a recollection where we've asked for rebuttal before members of the public have spoken in the public hearing.
Yeah, it's after, but it's before we close them, I think.
I thought it was before.
It is before, and I certainly know that I have before on the Planning Commission of saying the applicant will certainly have an opportunity to rebut anything or reply. You know, rebut sounds negative, but reply to anything or add any additional information that they've heard from the public at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just asking the question, should we therefore not close the public hearing until we've then asked the applicant or their representative, would you like to address anything that you've heard?
That's entirely
up just to a little.
That's entirely up to you, because again, you're still going to be looking at what that person's going to be, you know, saying. A lot of times it's just.
I think that's what we do.
I think that's what we do.
Yeah, I think it is.
You asked that before. I do whatever's next on the sheet.
But your question was about closing it before we speak.
Right.
So I think it should be closed, and then you make the motion and we have the comment.
Well,
I think it keeps it orderly.
Having the debate on the merits of the proposal among the council, yes, that should happen.
Yes.
But to ask factual questions of the applicant, is that's what this is saying, is that that would happen during... Try it out
because,
next time.
Yeah, because some of that may actually impact you. So if you're asking, you want information that can have a material impact on your decision, if it's happening during, I guess, the exchange, which is... Maybe during the public hearing should be great. Once you open it up, or again, it depends on who's the applicant. I mean, just think on that a little bit more.
Yeah.
I just think it's going pretty well, and I think with you sitting on the dais to be able to allow us to ask those questions, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to really pin down exactly what we're doing in there.
And the rules.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So, but we can form this the way you want. So we have this sort of general outline right now. As you can see, it's kind of malleable based on what's going on at the time. So the question is, how far out do you want the rule to be sort of constructed at this point? Is this too much? If you want it exactly how we're doing things right now, I can revise it to do exactly what we're doing right now and put some language subject to whatever else.
I guess I want to do what... is this last time, again, this was the first time we swore in speakers. It makes sense, reading this and thinking about that process, it does make sense to me that someone delivering factual information, whether it's the answer to a question or not, would be done in the confines of the public hearing. Hadn't really occurred to me until I read this, and I'm like, okay, that makes complete sense to me now. So I don't, let's try it out next week and see how
it goes.
Seriously, we'll just give it a little run. But I don't mind if it's the right thing to do, which is to have the evidence in the confines of the public hearing. Let's just go ahead and do that.
I have some questions and comments. So under A2.
Yes, ma'am.
This is just in the second paragraph. There is a his in there that needs to be removed.
Yes, I struck through that on
the line.
That
okay,
was
you
just
got that.
That was an error.
Okay.
It was, yeah.
Then just going to B1C. I'm just wondering, should that be there about the mayor assigning or removing from committees, or should that go in the section about committees?
Well, I was also broadly dealing with the powers of the mayor's office.
Okay.
So it's in both places. It's not just in one place. So
okay.
We do comment on it at the back as well.
Okay.
But it's just, you know, if somebody's just looking at, can she do that or can he do that, you know, they say, oh yeah, okay.
Then on under B4, the conduct of business and meeting decorum, section B, you know, I know this is in our ordinances, but we're not following it very well as far as like people only speaking twice. And in all honesty, I feel like the way we're doing it, I know this is not going to sound right, but by not following it, I'm fine with that too, because I think sometimes there are things that come up which some council may, you know, a council member may want to then follow up on that.
Yeah,
right?
Limiting responses and doesn't foster debate.
No, yeah, and so, but it's in our code. It's in our code
and
ordinance.
It's really sort of a Roberts Rules thing. You read through most the rule is written so that you get two times, and it's usually a 10-minute maximum per item. So as we break it out, it's no more than 5 minutes each time you speak. So it kind of gets us to what Roberts provides for anyway. You know, whether you keep it, since it's really sort of what Roberts calls for, you need to either, I think, say something differently. We're not going to follow that. Any member can speak to an issue as many times as the chair allots as long as everyone has had an opportunity to speak the same number of times or something to that effect. This is helpful when you have someone who really sort of goes off. You can utilize it to pull them. And I hate to say it, but I've been there. You know, this everything is a campaign speech, and you could be in meetings for a long time with someone taking advantage of their opportunity to speak on every single time. And this is just to a motion. So let's just say someone amended the motion. It starts the clock all over again. So how much I love meetings.
I also feel like asking a question doesn't really count against this.
Yeah.
To me, this is advocating for one side or the other of the issue. And yeah. 5 minutes is probably way too long. You can't get your point across.
Or you can just say questions aren't included in this or something to that effect if you want it to be something different. But this doesn't really go too far off from what the rules actually provide for. So if you want to do something differently, we can just say we're not following that rule.
Well, I just wanted to put it out there. Maybe it's something that we think about if we want to
that
kind tweak
of falls,
it or anything.
That kind of falls under your previous comment, if it's not broken.
Right.
Well, we don't need it till we need it.
Right.
Right. I know.
I will say, last week, you followed that pretty well, though, because I lit that baby up, and I had been pretty quiet, and you went, I'm going to let Mr.
I thought I was just special,
but then I read that's in there. Damn. She was following the rules. So.
Yeah, I think she and anybody that does it, you know, take a mental note of who's next.
Right.
Well, we don't need to hear from the same people over and over again until everybody's got a chance.
Okay.
So I'm excited when somebody new comes up on.
I know.
No, Greg. We haven't heard from Greg yet.
I also had a question.
And also for special.
I had a question too, because you brought this up about the approval of the agenda, which is something we haven't been doing. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because it's an E1 order of business.
Yeah.
Can you pick us the line number?
Yes.
It's 554. That does help, line numbers. That's
a
good idea.
So the process on many agendas, it's just like your approval of minutes. It shows up, approve the agenda. And so that's your opportunity to say, I want to add something. I want to take this away. Can we hear this first?
But how can we add something, though, if we haven't noticed it?
Well, the notice doesn't go to that far into your agenda. So you can add something to your agenda without violating sunshine. It doesn't, you know, there are some rules with respect to publishing your agenda, but it doesn't limit you that you can't add items or take items away. So that's what the general law is.
Would they be restricted on ordinances?
But those are under different rules that are specific for those actions. But let's just say you had some business that needed to be conducted. Like, we need to sign this agreement before X date, and we don't have it on the agenda. There should be a process that you add that to your agenda, or the city manager can put it before you before the contract expires or something to that effect. We don't have that right now. And so by having this on the agenda, it signifies we can change our order of business if it becomes expedient for us to do so. We had some other, a lot of these have been informed by experiences since I've been here. So we've had meetings where we've had a room full of people who are gonna public comment, and you got courtesy of the floor before you get to any city business. So all staff is sitting around waiting to go through 100 speakers before we can get to something that, you know, they have to be here for. It would have been nice to be able to reorder the agenda.
Oh, and so at this point is where you could do
this. This is where you can do it. You can look around and say, or you can do it. There are rules. So I'm writing in something that's a little different from Robert's, but even had you gone through this process of approving the agenda and something else comes up, you can move to amend the agenda. So you've already done this approval process. Under Roberts, it would require a 2/3 vote to amend the agenda once it's approved. But here we're saying we can amend our agenda whenever we need to by a majority vote. It's simply by saying, look, something's come up, we got to reshuffle.
I've done that before on Planning Commission.
Okay.
The other night, last Monday night, fortunately, the two items that were going to involve the most public input, as we all already knew, were the last two items. But if I picked up on that and knew that there was going to be big public input or whatever, I might move that item to the end and let the other people get out of there beforehand and move those items to the end of the agenda. So okay. I think similarly, that type of
is exactly
the mayor has that.
Okay. Yeah, and I just wanted to understand, because we've never done it before, so I wanted to understand what it was, how it would work. Okay. Okay, and then what line is it?
Thank you.
It's on the left column.
Oh, 592. The more I think about it, I really have some heartburn in limiting the courtesy of floor to visitors, or actually 580, 8 to 30 minutes per meeting. I just do. I just feel like that's an opportunity for the community.
Line says unless otherwise extended by the majority. I think if there's a reasonable discussion going on, it's not the same thing repeating over and over again. I think the majority of council is going to extend it.
So, and one of the questions I got earlier was the impression was that it applied to every single time a member of the public was given an opportunity to speak. And this is only for courtesy of the floor. People see something on the agenda and they want to speak to it. They have those opportunities for those agenda items to speak. So this is where it's just really not moored by anything other than your desire to be heard on whatever the issue is. So,
okay, well, and I appreciate what you pointed out, Corey, because I mean, again, though, I go back to, well, I don't feel like it's broken, so I'm not sure why we need to put the 30 minutes in there right now, but that's just my feeling on that.
I think if it's one issue and the room's packed with people talking about one issue, we could handle it differently than if it's 30 people on 30 different issues. I would feel differently about that. But if we say to the group with the one issue, like, okay, 30 minutes, use it wisely, I think that would help moderate who's speaking and what they're speaking on and how long each of them are speaking. So I think it's nice to have that backstop there, but obviously we have the full ability to exchange it if we need to.
Okay.
And limit each individual speaker too, true, which I haven't really done.
And likewise, if it also mentions that the mayor may reduce the amount of time each person has to speak.
Yes, ma'am.
Can the council weigh in on that? Because if we, say the mayor says I want to reduce it, but say I don't agree with that, and
I would think it would be the same thing that a majority of the council would have to approve the reduction in the time.
So,
we
could ask language like subject to the approval of the council, but some of these are the benefits of being in the chair position. So, I mean, and I'm not just speaking about this, but
you have 5 seconds.
I didn't have
But it just comes. There are perks in being able to do certain things.
But if you have a mayor that's not entirely reasonable,
that's true.
Then the council. I feel the council needs to. I would like for the council to have the ability to kind of have some input there.
But I also think that if a mayor was that type of mayor, then the citizens it would very quickly get out to the citizens, and he would be held accountable in another way. I mean, I think.
Or she.
Well, I know you want it. I have somebody else in mind.
If you look at it based on the changes that are going to be discussed on the speaker's cards, some of this is going to sort of lend itself nicely to just an efficient meeting, because we're eliminating some of these opportunities to tell us what you in advance what you want to talk about. So we know it's not content driven. So, and the rule actually says in the interest of time. So we are basing it almost like on a head count kind of thing. We got a lot of people here who want to speak. This is how we can get through it with a in a reasonable amount of time. And you're making that decision without having any information in most instances about what you're going to hear. So it makes it a cleaner process, and it takes a little bit out of that, you know, concern that you've got someone who's going to be a little bit arbitrary in how they're exercising the power of the chair. Because remember, it has to affect everyone. So it's not Betty Sue, you only get a minute, and Chad, you get 7 minutes. It's not going to be that.
So I'm going to agree with Sandy in that I'm reluctant to limit the time that the public has, because we are public servants, and if they want to, I mean, it's no fun to get kept here till midnight. I haven't been here till midnight, but at the same time, if the public wants to have a chance to speak, I think they deserve the right to speak. I do appreciate the mayor last week, and I think this, we all kind of knew that there were going to be some things coming up, and I think that the mayor provided some anticipatory guidance to the group in regards to if you know, we understand if you just want to stand up and say, hey, I agree, that gives, if you have something different to add and for a different reason, yes, because you would have had a bunch of people stand up and say, absolutely, yes, you know, and rehash the exact same thing over and over again, and that does not benefit us as a council, and it doesn't benefit the process. So I think, yes, when we get into, in the short amount of time that I've been here, I've already figured out that if there's a hot button issue, I'll know about it prior in my email box and via communication from the citizens. So I think that anticipatory guidance at the beginning of the meeting, just kind of let out for the crowd, did help last week and would help in the future. So if we kind of look at it that way, and the only other thing I was going to mention, that Corey, you mentioned accountability. If somebody were to stand, he or she, whomever was at the mayor's position doing that, the accountability will take time. It's not instantaneous.
Yeah, sure.
And so that might be problematic in the future.
Bill, just to clarify, though, this is only dealing with courtesy of the floor. So this isn't a specific
an agenda
issue.
Item.
So this is just the random, you know, people want to come and talk to the council before. I just want to make sure
this doesn't
limit. If you want to come and talk about agenda item G,
okay.
This is just that beginning, which is, you know, we have, I mean, in my 10 years here, I think we've probably gone over half an hour two times, and those are both in the last 2 years.
Okay.
So I don't think it's common,
okay.
But I do think that this is one of the perks of being the mayor, is running that meeting and determining the length of time and how much of the agenda, or how much of the evening is going to be taken up by courtesy of the floor.
But
and I think I can use my judgment, or he or she can use their judgment to determine if it should go longer than that.
And my response to that is going to be that if there is something or things, plural, that are out there that are important enough to the citizens to take that much time, then maybe we take a moment to listen. Again, just throwing that out there.
And we can do that.
It can be extended.
Okay. I'm just putting my voice on there.
Yeah. Line 742. It says that the board, commission, or committee of the city council reside in the city and is a qualified elector, and I don't think that that's a requirement of the CRA.
It's not a requirement of the pension board either.
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that, because that may, I mean, we may need to put some...
I think for the CRA, you have to live in the district covered by the CRA. We just had to address that in some form.
No, I think you can be a business owner.
Business or...
Yeah. You can be a business owner, but you don't have to live there.
They don't have to live in this.
Yeah, so I just think that.
How about it? Unless otherwise provided
by
state statute or something. And the reason we are dealing with this is because we have a potential person who hasn't disclosed moving out of the jurisdiction and still serving, and residency is required for that particular appointment. So. You know, at least you're demonstrating in another place the importance of residency when it's required.
I think you just need to add a qualifier, though, like according to the board, which board you're on.
Yeah.
Pension board,
okay.
Members,
right.
there's certain members that don't have to be resident.
We had somebody do that that wasn't qualified anymore, and they had to go back and redo all the meetings.
Yeah.
Several years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. There was also, where is this? It's, line 807, where it says the standing committee, unless created as a standing committee, all committees shall expire one calendar year from its creation, unless earlier terminated or extended by the city council.
Right.
But our ordinance, section 291, says that a committee is automatically dissolved if the committee fails to report on any matter referred to it within 60 days of the committee's formation and referral. So I would just refer you to that, to look at that, because we may need, I don't know if things need to be cleaned up between the two.
I don't think there is a conflict per se, but it could be further refined. So unless they report out after within that initial period, which keeps them going from this automatic termination.
Well, automatically dissolved if the committee fails to report.
Report one time. So let's see, there are opportunities for multiple reports to the city council. They only meet that first one. All it does is serves as a backdrop. We just don't have these things just keep going on without there being either a check mark, yes, they've completed the work, a check mark, the city council has actually terminated them or extended their time. You know, I don't see a conflict because your work can extend beyond 60 days easily. And then what do you do once you meet that first initial report based on the current statute? You could still be out there and not doing what you're supposed to do, and council has otherwise become preoccupied and kind of forgotten that they created this committee. You know, it happens. Created this committee that's kind of out there not doing much of anything, but is in existence. So this is basically saying after a year, if you haven't produced anything, it's over. So it kind of takes care on the back end.
Okay.
Perhaps.
I don't know. I'm just thinking you need to look at that section of the code.
Do you want me to take
2-91.
It out? Or you want?
Well, no, I don't know. It just seems like this is in addition to what you're saying here.
I don't have this provision, like the factors that would implement 2-91 incorporated here.
Right.
But this does not
conflict with that. Okay. All right. And I just have two more questions.
Can I ask a real quick one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Line 666, it's talking about a recess. In lieu of a recess, the mayor may at any time cause a meeting to stand at ease if he or she deems it advisable or necessary under condition than existing. What do you mean by stand at ease?
Let's take a break. Stand at ease. That's it.
I'm just calling it.
Yeah, because a motion has to be seconded.
Okay.
And
I'm going to start saying stand at ease.
That's the language of the rule. It's basically my military job.
Sorry, Sandy.
No, it's okay. 1168 under the city clerk.
I love it.
It says including registration of voters. And I don't know, Sherry, do you register voters?
1168, do not. We refer them to the supervisor of elections office.
So
this language was just, I kept what was already there.
Okay.
And it marries up with either what's in the code or in the charter.
It's in the charter.
So it is in the charter?
Yeah,
it was just.
Yeah.
Well, I just caught that and I was like, I don't think she does, but I wanted to ask. And
how did we miss that in the charter?
It's close.
Okay, and then the last question I have is line This is line 1200, or, yeah, 1200 of the city attorney.
Sounds horrible.
Why did you remove that the attorney shall furnish the officers or the heads of the departments his or her opinion of any question of law relating to their respective powers and duties?
I thought I had incorporated it in something else. We'll see here. It seemed to be covered on something else. So.
I wasn't sure that I saw it, but.
Be two paragraphs down, starting 1208, I think, something in there. It says, this council members for legal opinion or from a matter having impact on the city council or city organization. Is that where we are?
So if you look at lines number 1182 through 1184, the city attorney is the legal advisor and counselor, and all of the officers and matters related or arising in their official duties. I think that's broad enough to deal with somebody asking you an opinion related to the performance of their official duties.
So you feel that covers it?
I do. Okay. And then with respect to, if you go to 1191 through 1194, it just sort of gets a little bit more particular with respect to those officers serving on boards, committees, and commissions. But it's really sort of the same thing.
Okay.
And that was how I viewed it. I can put it back in, but a lot of that was, you know, I wanted to take out things that I thought were already covered from some other language, and that was one of them. But if you want to add it back, I can.
I'm good with it as is. I think you covered it broadly enough above.
Because this is just, again, it's just...
I always err on the side of
clarity, this doesn't cover everything that we do, either of us, but I mean, it's just, there's some things that are naturally a part of it. So you might have expressed authority, but there's all this implied authority that goes with that and implied duties as well.
And that's fine. I mean, if you feel it covers it, that's fine. Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Anything else? Any more questions?
Thank you. A2? Forward my notes to my phone for my iPad. 145. This is just from my own understanding. Let me get to it. About the cancellation of meetings, or special meetings may be canceled at any time prior to the start time. If the reason or purpose for it is no longer requires the city council to take any action prior to the next regular meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And after that says, a special meeting would be canceled by the member who requested it, the mayor, and then or the city manager?
Yeah.
Is that part of the, I mean, as this is in red, is that different or substantively? I guess it's in here. I did not see, I'll look at it again, we're extending an extra power to the city manager for the cancellation of TED meetings. I just don't understand.
We don't address address canceling a special meeting at this point at all. And so we have addressed, again, based on experience, if we don't longer have a need for the meeting, who can cancel it? And so it just seems natural that the person who called it can do it, and all the other two positions that are identified, they would have sufficient authority to cancel those meetings.
A good example would be the budget adoption that we do in September. Usually we set a date for a special meeting to do the adoption of the budget, but if we find out that Duval County has scheduled the meeting for the same day, we're required to change it to a different day so as not to conflict, so the people can attend both. Mm-hmm. And so we would have the authority to cancel the special meeting, which had already been scheduled, and set a new special meeting.
We've had that happen, as a matter of fact.
We have had that happen in the last 2 years in a row, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple of little things, just little typos that I saw. 765 going into 766. They were missing the word B. Let me find it here. Put it in there.
shall be given the opportunity, so you're talking about somebody being removed from a board, set appointee shall be given the opportunity to
be physically
present. Yeah, be physically present and speak to the council. Similarly, 1193. Sorry, I'm just nerding out here on this document.
I found a couple of those too, but not the ones that you're pointing out.
I can't find typos until everything is the same color.
And so under 1193, and opinions as may be required or reasonably requested by such bodies. It sounds better.
1193.
As reasonably requested by such bodies.
Yeah,
where's
1193?
Oh,
yeah, 1193. And then going back to, and I can't remember where I just wrote myself a note as you were saying it earlier.
Yeah.
The congratulations or condolences, and this is maybe not about this. I don't know if that was in the beginning. I just mentioned it, and I was trying to work on my iPad. But I heard if we send out congratulations or condolences, it is only so as not to have an issue arise. Pardon my ignorance, the lack of understanding. How is it that an issue would arise from that? Sending out congratulations or condolences to somebody through your city email.
It's just from you. Just make sure
I can't say
it's
on behalf of the city council.
From you, as you're not communicating on behalf of the city council.
Right.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Sorry. That's it.
Anything else? We're good. So, are we good for a final tee up?
If you have any questions, you can always call Sandy or me, because I've had the same questions when you guys contacted me.
Thanks, Sandy. So we've got about 24 minutes left and a couple more items to try and crank through. The next one is the comment cards.
Have a seat, Dr. Allager.
I'm really eager to share these questions.
I'm going to turn it over to Sherry. One of the things that the clerk's office and the attorney's office has been working on is a redesign of the courtesy of the floor cards. But given that they are your council meetings and your board appointees working within those boards, we wanted to make sure you're comfortable with what the cards look like before we actually roll them out. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sherry.
Okay. I sent you all the draft version of the cards, and so right now we have currently two different speaker cards, one for the city council and one for the boards. Mm-hmm. And the current speaker cards have printed on them 5 minutes or less, and our standard right now is to do 3 minutes or less. So right now, the clerk's office goes through and scratches through the five on every card and puts three. And we started running low. In fact, we've run out of the board ones, so we're using photocopies for those board cards now. And they were printed 6 years ago, so the language is very old, and there's even something on the draft form that says, please silence your cell phones and or pagers.
I know.
So that's how old the forms are.
How many did they order?
When you order certain prints, it's like the minimum is 1,000. So it's lasted us 6 years.
Mayo Clinic issued me a pager.
Exactly. Yeah, every doctor's got one.
And then the amount of time for the minutes was changed to 3 minutes back in 2018 by Mayor Latham. And so I approached Mike about updating them before we got them printed, and he suggested to have Sandy take a look at the language, which was a good idea. So she reviewed the cards and made some suggestions, which is what the draft that you have was based on those. And the changes that were made first that we're trying to get rid of having two different cards and kind of combine them into one universal speaker card. And then the amount of time was eliminated, and I think some of the discussion here about how much time people have covered that. And also allowing the chair to determine the amount of minutes and also a cap if needed, so it's not written on the actual card in case it changes in the next 6 years, so we can keep that standard.
And then the city attorney came up with a new statement for decorum, was revised, and then the option to check a box for support or opposing an item was removed, and also the option to support or oppose an item without addressing council was removed also. And I just wanted to get your input on your thoughts on the changes, and if there are any additional changes you would want, or if you have any questions.
I'm glad you guys are finally doing this, because I remember seeing the pagers on it. What was the reason for removing the item in support or oppose?
Yeah, so yeah, if you could, because I asked Sandy the same question too, so if she could explain.
So there were a couple considerations. First of all, there is some jurisprudence that when you ask the public to identify in advance whether they're in support or opposition of a matter, if it's a really heated issue, the court can construe that as maybe having some chilling effect on speech. So for courtesy of the floor, my recommendation is that you just eliminate any identification at all as to what they're going to speak about. And then the idea is, if someone is actually going to take advantage of the speaking opportunity, you will find out once they open their mouths whether they are in support or against something. Sherry is correct, I initially recommended the removal of the option of saying, I don't want to speak, but I'm in support or I'm opposed to X. I'm going to withdraw that recommendation and have that reinserted, because there's a provision in Florida statute that says that we either have to have procedures or forms that allow someone who doesn't want to speak to actually communicate whether they oppose or support something.
Although, and that would be honestly, that's only correctly filled out 50% of the time, maybe. I mean, the mayor knows, and having been chair of the planning commission for so long, it's a crapshoot as to whether that's really what they mean. But,
right.
You know.
But at least she can call them up and say, or, you know, at least ask them.
Well, we got to be supported by the law. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think maybe some of the confusion may be eliminated somewhat. If you're not asking a speaker to say, I'm going to speak in support or against something, who are the only people who will be in that position to inform you are those who are saying, I don't want to say anything.
Right.
But I support X. Or, I don't want to say anything. I oppose X.
I'm fine with what I see with the changes. So, I guess my only question, my only question would be that, you know, was there a reason to keep the cards separate so that you knew that these cards were board related or anything like that?
It's just what we had on hand.
Okay,
so going back, just want to make sure, I'm really far away from you right now, so let me make sure.
Okay.
So we're adding back in, I don't wish to speak, but I support or oppose whatever agenda. But
exactly.
The speaker, if you are there and you are going to speak, I don't know where
that's
you stand
right
on it.
Until
so in our procedures for our public hearings, mm-hmm. we say open the public hearing with those speaking in support, then those speaking in opposition to, and this last time it was all mixed in,
yeah.
So we didn't do it. But do
yeah.
we need to not do that?
I would recommend
okay.
not doing that.
Okay.
Just saying, if you want to speak to this issue, here's your opportunity.
Okay.
And
Sandy?
Yes, sir.
Lay out for me again your concern there with the court.
Yeah, there have been, in cases where particularly in a public hearing, the chair has asked the speakers who are in support to be on this side of the room, those get against on this side before they, you know, come up and they make their comments. And the court viewed that as something that was very intrusive and put the speaker in a particularly difficult position in matters where, you know, public sentiment is running quite high. So by the, just by virtue of your having to take this place just to make your comments, you might be subjected to, you know, ridicule or some abusive language from your neighbors or others in the community. And nothing really is served by that, you know, that you have to say, I'm in support of it before you actually get a chance to actually come up to the podium and say why you're in support of something. So because there's very little value derived from it, it makes more sense to just get rid of it, and then we don't have those issues.
Let me ask you, because you, Chair, and the paragraph talking about offensive manner, making personal, rude, or slanderous remarks, outbursts or applause, do we want to get down to the nitty-gritty, or are you satisfied with what you see right there and handle it? Because we're seeing more of that kind of thing, to me.
Because that's not necessarily, you're not necessarily seeing that. You're not necessarily a speaker, though. So if it's on the speaker card, I think it should be directed to your decorum at the podium.
Okay.
Whereas just the general vibe of the room, I can just cover that verbally if it is something where everybody wants to applaud every time someone speaks.
I know in the paragraph it says where if you make obscene or slanderous comments, et cetera, you'd be voluntarily asked to leave the meeting. I know there's some comments that were made last week to some of the speakers. How is that handled? Like if someone is called a name after speaking.
You mean within the audience itself?
Within the audience itself.
Them at each other.
I would say just in the interest of time, since that's not really speaker card related, that maybe we have that discussion another time just to be clear.
Okay.
I've exercised it once.
Oh, Molly. Oh, sorry.
She didn't bring us.
We do have a couple of miscellaneous items, so hopefully we can get this through this one quick and then tackle a couple other things really quick.
Yes, so last August I came in a briefing and we discussed potential amendments to the special event policy. I've since rewritten the policy. It's been completely dismantled. And we're about 90% there, but we did want to bring up these three items because we didn't receive consensus when we were here last. And I have Chief Smith here in case we have any questions directed for the police department. But as of right now, the staff's recommendation would be to postpone any of these amendments until we get a better feel for what's going to happen in Latham Plaza with that redevelopment and the potential P3 project in the municipal parking lot.
Great.
Well, and I'll just come out and say I don't agree with the alcohol sales.
Sorry.
And the ticketed events, I don't agree with that either. Because I think what makes our events really nice is that they are, you know, if we have areas like we do allow to have VIP sections or whatever, that's fine. But I do not think our community wants us to have like an event that's, this whole event is a ticketed event. And, you know, I just don't think that that's the direction that our residents want to go in.
Was the question is whether we support you tabling these items?
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yes. The policy is 90% of the way rewritten. These are topics that came up at the last council briefing where we discussed it, where there was not a true consensus on either of these three topics. Our recommendation is to not do anything with these three topics, bring a formal policy back to you for adoption, and maybe in the next 12 to 24 months, once we see what's going on with the park, once we see what's going on with the P3 project on Latham Plaza, if we want to revisit these topics, we do.
So we don't need to discuss the merits at this point of each issue. We just need to agree, if we agree, to table them for now.
If there's a consensus to table these three for now,
get the 90%
version.
Okay.
Table.
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 My last name.
Good. Yes. Don't leave.
Oh, yeah.
Because we'll dive right into, we do have a handful of miscellaneous items. The first one that Molly wants to talk to you about is FinFest and the Supergirl surfing event.
I don't know if maybe Mr. Sutton, Mr. Horn, if you know what happened last year with FinFest, but their event falls within the March to September timeframe, and as the policy stands right now, we only allow single-day fests. But they applied last year for a two-day fest. It was approved, and we had to go to council for special approval for them to have the extended time. They are making the same request for this year. So.
Yeah, last year was a mistake on our part. We started processing the application and then said, oops, it doesn't fit into the right time frame of the calendar. So we came back to council to ask for an exception to the policy. In this instance, the applicant likes the time of year that they're holding their event and is requesting special consideration to hold that event at the same time of year outside of the window of where you can have a multi-day event. So rather than us just putting it on the calendar for your, or putting it on a meeting for your consideration, we wanted to see if there's a consensus from council that you would like to formally consider their request at an upcoming meeting.
Are we going to just consider their specific request, or are we going to open that up to other people as well? Because it just feels like if we're doing it for one person, we almost have to open up the potential to do it to others as well.
Well, and that's why we wanted to bring it to you, to council. We did not want this to be subjective where administration just says, we're just going to start putting every request in front of council without having any type of a...
I think the event's fantastic. They do an incredible job. I mean, I have no problem with them doing it, but I just want to figure out a fair way.
Or can we say we're grandfathering them in?
And I think the other thing, too, is when they had their event last year, we were in the midst of revising the special event policy, and the anticipation was that there may be an opportunity to allow them to do a two-day event. So I think they moved forward kind of with that hope because it's been a quality event, so they've done 2 years now. So they've actually had 2 years of two-day festivals. So they're kind of established in anyone who knows events. You've got to start booking talent and everything really far out. So I would like to see us go ahead and make a one-time, well, not necessarily even one time, but go ahead and prove it this time in sight of the fact that part of even their history is because of an error on our part, but they've established themselves and they've shown themselves to be a really good event that I think is in line with what we're looking for our community.
What's the date of their event typically?
It's
September, wasn't it?
If we allow 2 days this year, it would be the 15th and the 16th of September.
And so right now it just says from March through October, you can't do it?
March to September.
Can we right now they can't do it. Well, they're inside the window where you can't have the multi-day events.
Yes.
Can we just change the date, move it back a little bit so there we just add that one extra month in? Where there's a potential for multi-day events? Or
that would be up to you, and we would amend the policy accordingly.
But this, she's already got a draft policy that's 90% done that we need to take a look at. So I almost feel like we just need to get this one in and done, and then
address
look
the
at
policy.
The whole policy. I mean, we know we need to, and this is a much bigger conversation that we're not going to have in the next 7 minutes.
Yeah, our intention is to discuss the final policy at the next council briefing in March. So if you're good with us putting an item on an agenda, we'll put an item on a future agenda for your consideration to approve this exception.
For this exception, can
I'm in favor of it.
Like 2 or 3 years so they can
plan?
Yeah, so they can plan and then we can adjust the rest around it.
We can structure an item in front of council that would meet the needs going forward.
Okay.
Again, we're just looking for a consensus to bring something in front of you for a formal consideration.
Yes.
Okay.
And the other event is the Supergirl Surf Pro contest that they do. That's that contest is determined by the World Surf League every year, and their Jacksonville event happens to fall on Veterans Day weekend. Per the policy, we cannot have an event on a holiday or holiday-adjacent weekend. So we would be looking for a special exception for this particular event. Now, Veterans Day doesn't always fall on a Friday, so it's not something that we would come back to you every year on. So it would just be this year.
Is that a big...
So again, this is the same request. We're just asking if you want to consider a special exception to this because Veterans Day moves. And unfortunately for this particular year, it would affect their ability to hold the event, but it's not going to be every year.
Is GP good with it?
Sure.
Being a holiday?
I'm good.
Okay.
I support it.
Both highly successful, right?
I think the fact that we have a surf event that
it's a holiday.
The schedule of the world surf global champions is pretty cool.
Okay.
So it sounds like a consensus to bring that one back for formal consideration as well. Okay, those are your two. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'll speak first so that Mike can get some other miscellaneous items in. We, as most of you know, we have an open position at the golf course, which is the general manager or facility manager's position. We would like to go ahead and open that up and start advertising for that. We feel that if we just change the title back to what it was originally, which is head golf professional, that would be more in line with the industry and perhaps help us in our advertisement for that position. There's no change in pay grade and no added position. I do believe the deputy city manager and HR director are going to bring some changes to the pay plan in March, and that will be included in it.
Versus what is it today, Jason?
General manager, golf course general manager. So we'll change it to head golf professional.
And there's not two positions today. There's not general manager and head golf professional?
No.
Like we see at some clubs? Okay.
So normally a head golf professional doesn't have anything to do with the F&B side of a golf club. So is it going to be delineated in the job description that they do have some oversight to that? Or
it is. Currently the job description will remain the same, Mayor, and it does have that item in there that position does have oversight.
Okay, cool.
And is it common for a head golf professional to have management responsibilities?
Yes, it is.
It is? Okay.
I think it depends on the club.
Yeah.
I mean, the mayor's been involved in high-end club where there's a different manager or director or whatever for different areas, F&B and golf and special events and other things, but in a situation like this with Jack's Beach Golf Course, I think it's pretty much one-stop shop. Mm-hmm. So
one guy, many hands.
Yeah.
Or girl.
Yes.
There you go.
I like this.
Funny today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Next one on the list. I don't think there will be any discussion on this one. It's not in our budget, but is council okay if we start exploring the replacement of the AV system in the council chambers?
Oh yes, that was on my list. It's right here on my list.
Our intention would be to start looking at replacing that system and potentially use the proceeds from the SLG settlement to pay for it.
Excellent.
You all good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we will start doing our work on that.
Sherry. Merry Christmas, Sherry.
I can't see. Is she crying?
She's very
she's so happy.
She's smiling. Tears of joy.
The last item that we had on here, and again, I know we've only got a few minutes. In kind of doing a retrospect on the council meeting from last week with the height ordinance and the fact that there was a deferral to March 20th, one of the things that we kicked around internally was whether or not we should consider preparing a second ordinance for council to take a look at, which would go something along the lines of what Mr. Marsh had suggested, I think a couple of months back, which is looking at something very site specific about increasing height on the Latham Plaza parking lot block, since we have an upcoming P3 project there. If that's something that council is willing to entertain, we could prepare an ordinance for the two meetings in March, first and second reading at the first and second meetings, and you could consider that as an opportunity to move forward with some type of height increase in the downtown, which could potentially end up being a showcase for a lot of the different incentives that we're talking about, because we would have total control over the P3 process, and thereby if it were to pass, we'd be able to tell developers you are required to do A, B, C, D, E, F, etc., and then that way we could use it as a demonstration project. It's a thought. We wanted to see if there was a consensus for us to put something in front of you for formal consideration.
And the A through F would be outlined with those items are.
That would actually be in our request for proposal that we give out to the development community. Where okay. We tell them that, you know, if you're building to this height, you are required to do step backs that
right.
would take
right.
place after the first two stories. It'd be a minimum of 15 feet on the following sides of the building. You would be required to have rooftop amenity as outlined as follows. You'd be required to do outdoor dining at a certain percentage of the frontage, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And I think so that particular property is kind of time sensitive since they are going to be putting the RFP out pretty soon.
Correct.
It's also, there's no residential anywhere around it. So I think we can make a really good argument on the community benefit in terms of parking, additional mm-hmm. parking in that area. It's on kind of the edge of downtown. So that's why I'm kind of like, let's ease into this a little more. And then if it passes, you know, we still don't know if it would be a sure thing in terms of the voters, but then we would at least know where the community stands on that, but to have some flexibility in terms of that property. And we don't have to use it.
Right.
Nobody has to use it, but if it comes in something that could be valuable in the RFP process and in terms of the flexibility and creativity of the structure, I think that would be really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with having it come.
Yes.
Looks like there's a consensus. We will start preparing something for you to consider. That's everything that I had on my list. We've got 3 minutes.
I just wanted to ask real quick. So we brought it up, National League of Cities. I was wanting to join the National League of Cities on behalf of Jacksonville Beach, but I would shoulder the responsibilities of that entity should we agree as a council and mayor to take on a role in there. And it could be limited as to as long as I'm in this seat, and if you want to get rid of it soon, you know, further on down the road, we could. But I think it requires everybody's approval. So.
Does it require a vote?
That's yeah, it's a consensus. That.
If everyone says they don't have a problem, Mr. Jansen doing that, then that's a consensus.
I don't have a problem.
Okay.
I have something. So we have our
what's
next.
What's the annual cost to be the national?
$2,000.
Do you get a sash?
I don't know.
you indicated you
Yeah, so I just wanted to say you should have gotten an invitation from Ollie about a tour of the Spring Hill Suites. It's an odd time of day. I'm sorry for that, but it's actually right before the downtown business owner meeting that we're having. And I'm going to go ahead and invite you guys to that too, because that is going to be at the pier. So Kirk DeWitt is going to do kind of a little behind the scenes and give a little update on the things that he's talking about. So if you're available to come, that would be great. We will not be publicly noticing the meeting, so there will be no discussion.
When is it?
Of city business the 21st, next week, next Tuesday.
Okay.
Can you get a copy of their contract also? Or is that what, that's what their contract is with the city of Jacksonville?
Yeah, CJ.
Their contract being, who's they?
I'm sorry, the peer.
The vendor?
Yeah.
Vendor.
Kirk DeWitt's contract.
Theirs is with the city of Jacksonville?
Yes.
Theirs would be with Jacksonville, yeah.
Can we see that? I mean, I just hear a lot of different things coming that I'm just trying to figure out.
We can make the public records request from Jacksonville. Yeah. I'm more than happy to do that.
I know he pays $85,000 or 10% of
it. Yes. But I mean, my concern is alcohol sales out there, and I mean, I have no problem with picnic tables and stuff out there, but if a storm's coming, where are they going to go for safety reasons?
I think he has he will move on. I don't think he would just leave them there.
I just need to know in writing. I know his intention wouldn't be to do anything damaging, but I just want to make sure that there's some plan in place.
We'll get a copy of their agreement and we'll distribute it to all councilors.
And I would suggest that we not address those questions to Kurt,
yes,
but to the city of Jacksonville. If we as a body have concerns, then that should go to Daryl Joseph or Brian Burkett and not directly to Kurt, because Kurt is running everything by them as far as what he's doing. So I think that would be more of a peer-to-peer. I did that. Okay, that's all I have.
One thing I wanted to bring up, Representative Kyron Michael showed up at the Beaches Watch State of the Beaches meeting. And I understand that she met with the mayor and with you,
yep,
and got a tour of City Hall, I guess.
So, I mean, is there a debrief or something that you guys could share with us on that?
I can tell you that we were basically like city government 101 was
oh,
the
really?
Goal. It was not there was no policy discussion. There was, I mean, she was, this was before Christmas. She was drinking through a fire hose, as was her brand new district aide. So we had no agenda. I showed her around. We took her into all the departments and sat down and talked to her. And Mike made a very good point to her that Jacksonville Beach is kind of a microcosm of everything that you could see in the state. We have a coastline. We have an intercoastal. We have a police department. We have an electric utility. So he encouraged her to use us as a resource on state issues that she may not be familiar with. You know, come visit the water treatment plant, whatever the case may be. So really just establishing a kind of introductory relationship.
And when you all meet with her at the Legislative Action Days, she has agreed to be a sponsor for an appropriation for us for support of the conversion of the chlorine gas systems to liquid bleach at our potable water and sanitary sewer facility.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll get us some money in the door.
And is anybody sponsoring the license plate readers?
Peter Dahl?
Here.
Murray?
Just really quick, I do.
Emily Dilfer?
Everybody with Sandy.
Colleen White?
At Urban Trails.
Justin Lehman?
The funding for it.
Nicholas Andrews?
We did. Here.
Justin Henderson?
Here. Leanna Comfort did mention to me the other day, she had the name of somebody that we need to get within D.C. I mean, I really want to get all of that funded without coming out of City of Jacksonville Beach Pop.
Jason.
Perfect, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.